Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the DP World Tour. I'm your host, Ollie Silverton, and as usual, I'm joined by our expert guests as we look ahead to the D&D Real Check Masters on the DP World Tour and the final event of the PGA Tour season, the Tour Championship. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at the UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. Yes, it's time to meet these esteemed guests we have in the golfing world, and they are quite that. We've got Tom Jacobs, who's the host of the Lost for Words podcast, Ben Everill, senior writer for Golf Bear, and Kit Alexander, broadcaster at Sky Sports. Welcome to you all. I'm going to come around the house just to see how we're feeling, what we're on the back of the BMW Championship, starting with you, Tom, because I think maybe there was a bit of success was there had.
Yeah, so it could have been more. Max Homer was in the places, and it felt like he had a real good chance to win. And at one point, I think it was Saturday early on, Homer and Rose were 1-2, and I was feeling quite positive. And then, of course, Justin Rose threw in the round that he threw in yesterday. Max Homer didn't quite get to the heights he needed to, and of course, Victor Hovland shoots a 61. So all of those kind of things didn't matter in the end. But no, good. It was nice to see. Less said about the ISPS hander, the better for me. But otherwise, yeah, really good. Really good week. Set up the Tour Championship really nicely as well.
Yeah, absolutely right on there. I mean, it was tough picking the ISPS hander side of things. We'll come on to that in a minute. But first, Ben, how did you get on? And what did you make of the BMW Championship? Because it was a fantastic event from the start to the finish. It was amazing scoring.
Yeah, sensational stuff from Hovland, as you mentioned there. Like, just to come home that strong and come from so far behind. I mean, I think he hit 50-1 in live betting in the States during that final round before the turn. Was an afterthought, really. Everyone was just wondering whether Scheffler would actually make a putt and take down Fitz. And then all of a sudden, we had that just brilliant display. And I think it shows his maturity, really, how he's come about over the last 6 months when he's really decided to figure out his strategy, get things sorted. And then when he needs to go at pins and go at it, he still can. And it was a very mature and exciting performance. We'll see. This could be the making of Victor Hovland. We could see even better things next year.
Yeah, it was so exciting. And from the Europe side of things, it's very exciting to see it all kick off. And Rory saying, glad you're on my side. Also, Ben, I've noticed you've been on one episode. You've already moved to 50-1, not plus 5,000. So we appreciate that all massively already, speaking our lingo, which is great. Kit, that's obviously feel free again on the Ryder Cup stuff to touch on BMW champs. But you're probably someone who knows about Dan Brown's dog's name. You'll know everything about the guy, I'm guessing. He obviously won at Galgon Castle, 5-shot win that never looked in doubt after his opening 64. What can you tell us about this sort of relatively new name and face?
Yeah, no, Dan, I know Dan pretty well. And this is the type of win that I genuinely love to see. As much as the BMW Championship was sensational, the whole Sunday of golf for me this last weekend, I absolutely loved it because Dan Brown winning in sensational style, 5 shots. And he looked so comfortable in the lead, which is incredible because, you know, I was there when he got promoted from the Euro Pro Tour, the third tier, made an unbelievable up and down from 90 yards on the 18th at Slaley Hall, one of the most difficult finishing holes you will find anywhere in the world, to finish tied second in that Tour Championship. That was enough to get him in the top five that got promotion to the Challenge Tour. That was at the back end of 2021, so not even that long ago. Had a really good season on the Challenge Tour last year as well. Finished 30th ultimately. I was chatting to him. He was so disappointed not to have got promoted, having got to the grand final on the Challenge Tour. And I remember chatting to him there. Then he went third at Q School to get his DP World Tour card, made his first 13 cuts, incredibly great consistency, locked up his card really for next year with a tied seventh at the Barbasol Championship a few weeks ago. And as he said, then that allowed him to freewheel a little bit. And my word, he freewheeled his way all the way to that incredible victory. And you know, winning at that level is amazing when you've not been there before. But he'd never won at the Euro Pro Tour level. He didn't win at the Challenge Tour level. That's his first significant professional victory. And to make it look so easy, when he said afterwards it was beyond his wildest dreams, 2 years ago he was grinding it on the Euro Pro Tour. And now he's a DP World Tour winner. And those are the wins that I love to see, that I love to follow. That's what makes the DP World Tour special. As much as you've got the world-class golf of Hovland at the weekend, and my word, what a win that was, as you guys have said. Dan Brown, that will be even more significant to him and the people around him. And that's what I love to see, people's dreams genuinely coming true. And that's what happened with Dan Brown at the weekend.
I think also, Kid, like the important thing on this, like, which you'll know well, like, it's been the graduates and from the Q School or the Challenge Tour this season have done really well. Like, we've had multiple winners come from that level. Bradbury winning his first event, Nick Backham coming off of the Q School as well. Marcel Seam famously got his card back that way as well. So it just the way they've sort of come back onto the tour and established themselves really quickly. And I think, you know, we've had a massive disruption in the world a couple of years previously that I think has derailed a lot of people in terms of, you know, the ones that were between the Challenge Tour and DP World Tour didn't have the direct link to get back. So I think, you know, just the way it's been going is incredible. And the scenes that we've seen from some of those players getting a win or even, you know, just getting contention has been really impressive.
I'm not surprised to see that because you mentioned the disruption a couple of years ago. Of course, it was COVID. And that caused a real bottleneck in developmental golf and in the opportunities that players had. 2020, only five guys went up from the Challenge Tour. There was no Q School. There was no Q School the following year as well. There's so much talent bubbling just under there, waiting for the opportunity. And really, this past season is the first time in probably 3 years where guys that weren't already there have had the opportunity. And they have taken it. The depth is incredible. And I think we're going to see quite a lot of turnover in the next year or two. Just looking at the sort of race to Dubai now, there's a lot of established names who might actually be dropping off and yet more new players coming through. And we're seeing it in the States as well with more players getting opportunities straight out of university with PGA Tour U. You know, we're going to talk about Ludvig Åberg. We're going to talk about Adrien Dumont de Chasseur throughout this podcast and how quickly they've adapted as well. I think we're in a real transitionary period because of what we've seen with people being held back in COVID in the year or two after that. And it's exciting for golf because there's so much talent there and new names to learn.
And I think the other thing, like Kit, like you mentioned and maybe sort of alluding to, like we're going to lose quite a few players from DP World Tour through, you know, their rankings on the Race to Dubai. They go up and, you know, get a PGA Tour card for next season. Like, that there's a lot of real established DP World Tour regulars on there. And I think one of the things that's really opened up the pathway for the Alexander Bjorks have been really consistent, Maximilian Kiefers, that haven't necessarily got the wins, but just been so steady week to week, is because the Tommy Fleetwoods and the Tyrrell Hattons and the Shane Lowrys are not splitting time anymore. They're completely dedicated to the PGA Tour because of the elevated events. Like, as much as a DP World Tour fan and kind of, you know, follower, like, you don't want to lose those players. It does open up these opportunities for these stories you mentioned, Kit, that we love so much.
Yeah, spot on. I mean, I was so impressed with how just calm and collected Dan Brown seemed, given he'd never won before, been in that position. Like, absolutely astonishing. And these new names are on both sides. I think it's fair to say, unless you're a real golf fan, on the PGA Tour, you look at the top third, there's Taylor Moore, Adam Schenck, and Nick Taylor are probably quite new names. The strength and depth throughout both sides is amazing. And I mean, it doesn't make your job any easier, guys, picking winners. So very impressive overall that you managed to do it. And speaking of, it's probably time we dive into this week's events. Yes, on the DP World Tour this week, we have the D&D Real Czech Masters coming to us from Albatross Golf Resort in Prague. Kit, let's set the scene with Prague, actually, firstly. I believe you're heading out for us in Sky Sports coverage. I hear it's a hell of a city, not just for stag do's, but also golf and the course there. You've been before. What can you tell us about the place?
Yeah. I was out there a couple of years ago doing commentary at the event when Johannes Veerman won. Loved it. Sort of typical Central European resort course, I guess you would say. It's a pretty big course. It's relatively open in places, but there's water in places as well, and quite flat, to be honest. There's the odd little bit of sort of undulation, but not too much. The city itself is sensational. Great history there, incredible architecture. Like, when I was there 2 years ago, I really enjoyed having a wander around. We were fortunate our hotel was just a 10-15 minute walk into the center of the city, and even as that was in 2021, kind of still just coming out the back of COVID, as we've already mentioned, there was a great vibe to it. And yeah, not just your stag do's, but some really nice bars, some great food. I tried a thing called pork knuckle, which doesn't sound that inviting, but is a wonderful bit of pork with beautiful crackling on it. You get served with just like chilies and stuff, pickles and that kind of thing, bit of bread. Thoroughly recommend it if you're ever in the Prague area. So yeah, it's just a really cool, fun city to be in, nice vibe. And I like DP World Tour. I think, you know, you think about golf courses, but I think you want to think venues and cities as well. What are the cities in Europe and in the world that people want to go to? Can you get tournaments on there and build it around it? And I think Prague is one of those that when people come to Europe or people from Europe think, yeah, that's a city I want to visit. And there's a nice golf course there. Great vibe to it. Brilliant field this time around as well. The strongest field I think we'll ever have seen assembled in the Czech Republic.
Yeah, I mean, I love that we've turned from a golf to food podcast, but I'm absolutely fine with that. Ben, your attention, obviously, mainly on the PGA Tour towards the end of the season, especially with your content, but do you always keep tabs on the DP World Tour events? Because, and I also mentioned this because we've recently just seen the schedule come out for next year and some exciting changes there with the different swings. So, yeah, how close an eye exactly do you keep an eye on what's going over here, especially with the Czech Masters?
Yeah, well, look, I've got to be honest and say I won't be as close an eye as the boys here, but I definitely have to keep an eye on things, especially, as you said, when we're getting crossover and players who are starting to move over and try to get essentially on these Ryder Cup teams, right? So when they fall out of the PGA Tour FedEx Cup playoffs, you know that they're going to get anywhere they can to get more starts, and that's why we've got guys like Shane Lowry, as you said earlier, that are going to headline over there, etc. They can't afford not to, and I can't afford not to, obviously, as a handicapper or content creator to not be across all of these tours. And quite frankly, I should be across it more. So we'll see how we go. I'm going to throw in some picks. I haven't gone too far off the map. I haven't gone off the reservation here this week for the Czech Masters. But look, I'm just going to go basically. I'll give a little bit of a heads up, but I'm going to go to things that I've seen on my side of the world a little bit as well as anything else.
Yeah, nice. That's always important doing that. And we're going sort of the current form as opposed to other bits. But if we do look at the course, Tom, you've watched this for years, this event. What can you tell us about it? Because it looks like a longie, just under 7,500 yards, big, big fairways. So are we assuming it's long hitters, or is it a different sort of angle that you're looking into?
Yeah, Kit mentioned at the start that it is a long, wide course that isn't really much else to it other than the water really being a defence. And it's just the ultimate risk and reward golf course that you'll see people go and shoot 64s or 63s, and then they'll go and shoot a 71 because they found water three times in a round. Like, that's what you've got to factor in. But I've honestly never seen a golf course that correlates its success so much to driving distance. Like, I do see, you see it when the people, you know, you always hear like, oh, long hitters are preferable here, and you want the big hitters, the best ball strikers. You can say that every single week, but this Albatross Golf Resort in Prague is, if you are not leading or in the top 10 of driving distance charts, you're going to have to be absolutely spot on everywhere else. Like Maximilian Kiefer, not a massive hitter, but he was unbelievable with his irons and his putter. And just a couple of kind of stats, like since 2018, the leader in driving distance has also finished inside the top 8 of the Czech Masters. So Gavin Green led the field in 2018. He finished 3rd. A year later, Thomas Peters led the field in driving distance and won. Dean Burmeister led the field in driving distance and finished 6th. And Wilco Nienaber finished 8th after leading the field in driving distance. And then it very much, again, correlates in the same way as strokes gained off the tee. So Peters was 4th strokes gained off the tee when he won. 3 of the top 5 in strokes gained off the tee in 2021 finished inside the top 12, including Sean Crocker, who was 2nd. And then last year, 4 of the top 5 in strokes gained off the tee finished inside the top 8. And the anomaly was Victor Perez, who was 23rd.
Yeah, I mean, a stat that caught my eye actually was the green and regs. I think 4 of the last 8 winners have been 2nd or 1st. So that is crucial, and obviously that leads to more accurate players. But if you look at some of the past winners, the odds have been quite near the top of the market, actually. There's a lot in and around sort of 40 to 1 and under. So maybe that's a way in. And if we look at the top of the market this time, we've got Ludvig Åberg, who's might be quite popular later on, I presume, at 12 to 1, as is Shane Lowry, who's headlining up here. Then we've got Adrian Meronk, 14 to 1, Nicolai Højgaard, 18 to 1. And everybody's favourite name to say, Adrien Dumont de Chassard at 22 to 1. That's a bit of French A-level for you there, guys.
Magnifique, Ollie, magnifique.
Thank you. Anyway, Ben, let's come to you first, your outright pick for the event this week.
Well, you've already mentioned him there, Ludvig Åberg, or Åberg, is how you might want to pronounce it. I'm not sure exactly, but I'll go with it. Now, look, Tom, you were just music to my ears with all your stats throwing out, because let me show you, tell you about him on the PGA Tour this American summer. Look, if his stats had have qualified for all his positions, he's had five top 25s on the PGA Tour in the recent times, including a couple of top 15s. But if his stats had have registered for playing enough rounds, he would have been second on the entire tour off the tee, in strokes gained off the tee. He would have been third in driving distance on the PGA Tour, 28th tee to green, 20th in strokes gained total. So across everything, he would be 20th on the PGA Tour with the numbers he put up over the summer. He's first in eagles, 10th in birdies. The bloke can hit it a mile. He's going to be a superstar. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And I think he is, or should be, if he's not, absolutely on Luke Donald's radar. And if he can throw up something big in an event like this, then he's the type of wild card I think the Europeans might need to take down the Americans in the Ryder Cup.
Those stats are incredible. And that is a great fit for this golf course. But when I looked at the odds earlier, the fact that someone so inexperienced, who hasn't really been in and around contention and felt that heat of battle in a main tour event, as impressive as he's been, that feels short to me, joint favourite.
You're 100% right, kid. It is way too short for what you'd want. But at the same time, you know, winners are winners. That's what I've got to look at. You know, like I just think, look, he's proven it in the college. I know that's absolutely nothing to do with DP World Tour or PGA Tour quality golfers, right? But he has won, if you will, on the levels that he's played. And just I'm literally biased here, definitely biased towards the times I saw him in person. Just different sound, different smash factor, different everything. What week is it going to be that he breaks through? That's what we've got to figure out. Would I like it to be double these odds? Absolutely. I'd like it to be 30, 40 to 1, to be honest. But I just think that he's the type of guy that will take this chance to impress in front of Luke Donald and co. With both hands. And I think we'll see a big week from him.
Yeah. Tom, who are you throwing in then as your main outright? Let's hear it.
Yeah, so to kind of go, I've just got a little bit more experience, and it's Antoine Rosner, the Frenchman, who's 35-1. And look, the thing is, like, I've listed off all these big stats about strokes going off the tee, and I've led you to kind of the biggest hitters on tour, and Ben's mentioned one of them there. Kit's going to mention a couple probably as we go on. And Rosner isn't quite the longest, but what he does do is he blends in that little bit of accuracy where I think he's got a little bit of strategy just to avoid that bit of water. And he was 20th the Open Championship, where he was fourth after round one and round three, and that was really impressive. Of course, he fell away, and I think the pressures of trying to find your first major top 10 got the better of him, and that's absolutely understandable, I think. But he's a three-time winner on DP World Tour. It's not like he's just completely new to these sort of scenarios. He was 13th here last year, and he'd led the field in strokes gained tee to green and in approach. He gained over 11 strokes tee to green overall last year. So it's very clear what the problem was last time around. It was the putter. That's quite often the case with Rosner, but it's also been the reason that he's kind of won things. He's you know, hold a few bombs at times as well. So for me, Rosner is just that player that I think you can hang your hat on. There's going to be a certain level of safety with Rosner, and I just really trust him to go and get a fourth DP World title at a venue that looks pretty suitable for him.
I think a big thing with Rosner, when I've seen him play, and you can very quickly see if he's going to have a good week or not, check his alignment.
Yeah.
He gets his alignment on, he stripes it. One thing he struggles with, he can get a little bit close to the target and then he starts trying to pull it back to target, and he has a both way miss when he does that. You know, it's hard to work with a both way miss. You know, you can get away with one side. But if he's striking it well early and his alignment stays true from the start of the week right through, then you're on the money. That's when he does winning things.
There we go. Okay, looking at Antoine Rosner. Fast start. Love it. Ben, did you have a second name to throw out? Are you sticking one and done with Ludvig?
No, I'm actually going to, without notice, going to throw two names at you because of Tom's absolute throwing down all those awesome stats. But the one I had on my radar, firstly, was I think that going back to the Ryder Cup chat, that Bobby McIntyre, Robert McIntyre can get in the top five or at least contend. I'm not necessarily thinking he's going to win this week, but I feel like he's going to fight his little, you know, what off to really lock up that, what is he, third place on the European points list and just make a bird of it. Make sure everybody knows he's keen to be there in Italy and get it done. So I'm literally going for him on that tenacity that I saw at the Scottish Open where Rory took him down, etc. I know he missed the cut at the Open, but that makes sense after what all that energy he had used previously. And I just think he's somewhat rested and ready to kick it back up. And look, correct me if I'm wrong, boys, because I'm doing this off the top of my head, but Nina Bar, did he play well last week at your event there? I think so he's played well here before, I believe, at the Czech Masters. He's another young gun that I do have had my eye on in the past. So if you're looking for someone at a little bit higher odds that potentially could get something done in the each way market, I like Wilco Nina Bar.
Yeah, Nina Bar, he was eighth last year.
There you go.
Yeah, played in 2019 as well and finished 51st. So obviously that was one of his very, very early tour events. So to make the cut of the DP World Tour in 2019 was a big deal for him. And yeah, suits Tom's makeup of this course, which he said like a glove.
Yeah, and just to put on it, like, he is going to be one of my other selections, you know, where he's not going to be in the top two that I've picked, but he's played here twice. As Kit's mentioned, he's mentioned the 51st and the 8th. He was the leader in strokes gained off the tee last year, and on his debut he was second. So he has the absolute dream scenario. And as you mentioned, Ben, like, he played well last week and it was an eighth place finish. And he's slowly kind of finding a little bit of consistency. I think the real knock for me with Nina Bar is that he hasn't necessarily got in contention as much as you'd expect him to. So it's not even the case that he's got close to the front and lost. He just isn't getting close to the front, which is a little bit of a surprise, really. So, yeah, I think that's for me. But the next outright that I had on my card was Sean Crocker. And look, this is going to be based on very much what I just said about Antoine Rosner and the fact that when he played here in 2021, when he was second behind Johannes Veerman, which you'll remember, Kit, as you were there, he was fourth strokes gained off the tee, first in tees to green, first in approach. So very much exactly the same makeup as what Antoine Rosner was here, you know, a couple of years ago. And he's found his form again. Like, he really struggled after winning for the first time. I think it was Eddie Pepperell that he held off at the Hero Open last year. He was great down the stretch. And then all of a sudden, he just disappeared. And I wonder sometimes whether, one, it's just a complete relax off from the fact that he thought that was coming and he was due a win and he finally relaxed off. Two, I think he had half an eye on making the PGA Tour via the Korn Ferry Tour Finals and maybe just a little bit of distractions. But he seems to have found it. He was second out of nowhere at the Scandinavia Mixed, followed up with a 14th for the BMW International Open. Did go on to miss cut and withdraw his next two starts. But then I love the fact he bounced back 19th at the Scottish Open, PGA Tour field, quality finish, 10th at the Barracuda as well. Never outside the top three here in 2021. So he did miss the cut last year, but as I said, he was in a really bad run of form after that first win. So for me, Sean Crocker is someone I think is probably two or three wins coming up on the DP World Tour, and I hope it comes this week.
Yeah, he was really impressive 2 years ago when he finished second. The ball striking was sensational. You know, I once walked into the Srixon Tour truck and it was in the midst of his really good form, and he just said, I've got a real bad case of the center face. Like, he was like, I just can't miss the center of the club. He was confident, and he is a confidence player.
Is, yeah.
The fact he's found a bit of form these last few weeks, kind of under the radar a little bit, actually. Not many people have almost noticed the form he's found. I think he's a great pick for this week. And it's a massive week. And the interesting thing is, back in 2021, it was a little bit of a weaker field again last year. But obviously, with the Ryder Cup looming, we've got a lot of players here who haven't been here before, which brings its own interest to it. Guys who haven't seen the course, who don't know what it's all about. Shane Lowry at the top. But there's guys that have to perform well. Bob McIntyre, we've mentioned. You look at how things stand for Europe in the Ryder Cup right now. Okay, McIlroy, Rahm, Hovland, we know are in. Hatton, Fleetwood, Fitzpatrick, the next three on the world points list. All three of those are getting in. Only two of them automatically from the world point list. But whichever one doesn't, we know is getting a pick. That's fine. Then it starts getting interesting because Bob Mack can get caught, and he can get caught by Shane Lowry on that European list. He needs to do something massive these next 2 weeks, needs to win at least one of them, but it can happen. Maronk is right there as well. On the world points list, you've got Sepp Straka, who scraped into the Tour Championship somehow, but it gives him another chance to prove that he should be there. And I think if he does have a good week, it's going to be really hard for Luke Donald to leave him out. If he had missed out, finished 31st, 32nd on the FedEx Cup, not been playing this week, the pressure's on him, I think, to come and prove something before those picks happen, whereas now he's got the opportunity to do it at the Tour Championship. Justin Rose, I think, is probably going to get a pick. He's done enough. So the way we're looking at it, we've got the eight guys that I've mentioned there as locks or going to get picks, plus whoever gets in third on that European points list. So right now, that's Bob Mack. It could be Adrian Moronk. Could be Victor Perez if he can find something. He's really gone out of form the last few months. But then you look at other guys who are playing this week, both Højgaard twins, Nicolai, a winner in Italy. Can he do something this week? He's right there on the cusp. And then Ludvig Åberg, Adrien Dumont de Chassard. I mean, Tom, we were talking before we came on air, really interested about Dumont de Chassard.
Yeah.
What odds did you say he was to get in the team?
4-1 he is to get a pick.
And you said he might as well be 400-1, right?
Yeah.
But what if he wins? So the only criticism against Adrien Dumont de Chassard, who turned pro and has played 8 times on the Korn Ferry Tour, winning one of them, only finishing outside the top 11 once, but making all of the cuts. The only criticism against him is, well, he's doing that in the Korn Ferry Tour. What if he comes and does it on the DP World Tour this week and next week? Yeah. If he wins one of these events, or even if he gets into contention, the form he's in, it's not like we're looking down these guys looking for picks and going, they're all bang in form. How are we going to leave one of them out? It's up to someone to make a case right now. And he could do it just as much as anyone else.
Yeah, I think this is the thing, right? And this is why I said before we come on about how Robert McIntyre is in such a weird position, because he's in on points currently. He didn't play well last week. He knows that even if he gets in on points and just gets in on the team by merit, obviously, then he's got to still play well, because otherwise I just don't think he's going to play. Like, because there's just going to be no confidence in him, right? So Ben's obviously hoping for a big week from Robert McIntyre. Ben's made a good point here in the chat as well that you know, Justin Rose tanking yesterday, which is unfortunate for me, is what got Straka into the Tour Championship. And I think, interestingly enough, with Straka is that, you know, he comes seventh in the scoring at the Tour Championship last year in the 72-hole scoring. So I think Straka actually is really beneficial, as you mentioned, Kit, that it's really beneficial that he did get into the Tour Championship and can prove his worth over in the PGA Tour, rather than having to come here and force it, where he's never really played. So, yeah, that for me is key. Yeah, at the end, I think it's, end of the day, it's Robert McIntyre is his to throw away. Shane Lowry and Justin Rose are going to get in, but they need to show something in the coming weeks to kind of have some confidence. I think the dream scenario for Luke Donald is that Adrian Moronk does something over the next 2 weeks to force himself onto that team. Because then it just kind of takes care of itself, because Moronk has won on that course, McIntyre, of course, as well. So it's. I think it's, they want those. If De Chassard wins this week, it's going to give him the headache of all headaches. And I think actually he might lip down this week and then play really well next week, because his game isn't necessarily powered by a strong off the tee play like Åberg's is. So I'll be interested to see how he does in Crowns next week.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we can all agree on now, we've just finished the Women's World Cup. We won't talk about the final. That's just grown to 32 teams. Ryder Cup, we're heading towards 16-person, 20-person teams in a few years. We can just, yeah, you know, just make it a whole week and just really enjoy it. Okay, we're nearly done with this event, but we need one more pick from you. I think a bit of a longer shot. We've looked quite heavily there at the top of the market because of the great names of the Ryder Cup. But Tom Jacobs, I think you've thrown in your fourth pick, whose name ends ER. So I don't know if that's been your main theme or if there's anything behind that. But can you give us that name, please?
Ollie, you've always got great attention to detail, because I didn't know that. And I've typed them out in front of me, which is really embarrassing. Louis De Jager. Last year, he was third here. And again, I just talked about how much of a correlation it is just to driving distance, and I've never seen it as so clear. He was third in driving distance here last year, fourth off the tee, and crucially second in putting. So whilst he didn't have the razor hot irons that you want, he was just great off the tee and in putting, which is a great formula for this kind of golf course. And I think he's elevated his game a little bit over the last couple of seasons. He's a 5-time winner on the Sunshine Tour, so it's not like he hasn't proven he can win. He just hasn't done it at this level yet. He's not a young gun like we've been talking about for the last kind of half an hour or so. He is 36 years of age, but I don't think there's a better, well, I know there's not a better golf course for him on the DP World Tour than this one, because he's never finished higher than third, which he finished here last year outside of Africa. He's played a DP World Tour event in Mauritius. I think he's got a top three, but everything in Africa or South Africa for Louis De Jager, apart from his third here in Prague. So absolutely loves this event. perfect golf course for his strong driving. He's over 100-1. I think he's the kind of course fit that we're not looking at, because we've got the Abergs, the Nienabers, the Crockers, the whoever else that we kind of mentioned here. McIntyre, obviously a decent hitter as well. Like, I think we've got all these kind of long hitters at the top of the market that you can still find the same course fit. Nick Backham, people like that, Alejandro Del Rey, further down the market, and can just surprise this week where it just demands strong off the tee.
Nice, lovely stuff. Yeah, we'll recap all of these, but speaking of that, ERs, it's the Rosner, Crocker, Nienaber, De Jager theory, which we've got. I'll look a later on odds checker for any more. But I think that's pretty much it. What we do need to do, though, before is obviously find out who I like, because this is always a curse, in the quick game of Who Am I?
I'm calling myself the reigning champ in this.
I'm glad we've come straight on the back of Sting and Ben's just jumped in. I'm reigning champ. You are reigning champ. You're one from one, but there's a bit of pressure because you're up against Kit, who is essentially the Rain Man of golfers and random knowledge. So I have to do a different trivia when he comes on. So let's see how we go. But how Who Am I works is I'll give five tips, or not even tips, just suggestions, ideas, themes around a player. Each time you can jump in, you don't have to, you can save it and try work out who I am going for. So it's someone in the field in Prague this week. And the first one that I have, you will know them, Ben, it's fine, is a clue one, is I have never had a hole in one. Anyone, any pro golfers never had a hole
Adrian
in
Maronk.
One? Not correct, but I like just throwing a name out there. That would have been mic drop, gone.
Australian Open, I'll just go on with him. So, like, just
Tom or Kit?
I was going to say Shane Lowry.
To Kit saving it because he wants one and done. I like that.
I'm going to save it. Yeah, I don't want to go into
it. No, that's fine. Okay, clue number two. I beat Victor Hovland to win the European Amateur Championship 2018. That puts a bit of age on them. I'm going to leave you thinking because the next one goes well. That same year, I beat Colin Morikawa to win the Eisenhower Trophy.
Oh, is it one of the Højgaards?
I'm going to... Grant Forrest?
Wow.
Not Grant Forrest. That would have been wow. Ben?
That would have been a scalp there.
Did you want to throw a name out there, Ben?
No, I was thinking one of the Højgaards, but maybe not.
You take a shot in the dark or just...
Rasmus.
No.
Is your next guest going to be Nikolai?
I played in the 2018 Junior Ryder Cup. 2018 was one of the great years for this human.
2018 Junior Ryder Cup. So, yeah, geez.
I'm wondering if he's gone with an American to be kind, but I don't know.
We've got one more left. Tom Jacobs has been saving it perfectly. I'm a two-time winner on the DP World Tour. This is great. This is great. Love the tension.
Kit, how have you not got it? This is like up your street.
No one's a young American.
Well, no one said Nikolai Højgaard, have they? We've said Rasmus.
Oh, I said the wrong Højgaard.
It's Nikolai.
Bloody hell, the other one. It's the other one.
Yeah. It's like when you said the two wins, I was like, yeah, Nikolai's the one with two. Nikolai.
Incredible. Ben, so you said it after clue two. You said, I think it's the Højgaards. That's why I was like, do you want to say an A?
Then you threw, when I got it wrong, it threw me right off the scent.
I tried to abruptly give you a no.
The problem is, Ollie, is that I've mixed them up in my head. I thought I'd said the one that had won twice. I was wrong. That's because I'm not across. I needed to be further across the DP World Tour. Sorry, listeners. That's
not it. I think you've both got a hand on the trophy there because it was a bit of an assist. But absolutely right, Nikolai Højgaard. That was the most dramatic of all the ones we've done. Who Am I? Enjoyed that very much. And if you enjoy a game but don't want to bet, then the fantasy game on the DP World Tour website is perfect for you. You select six players and you've been given a few names today. You pick them for the week and then you can compete against your friends and others for bragging rights. Beautiful. Okay, it's time to move on now to our second event, which is, of course, the Tour Championship. Yes, it's the final event of the PGA Tour season. We've still got Ben smarting after that great assist.
I appreciate that, Ben. Thank you.
I can't believe I had them mistaken in my own head. That's the problem.
It's easy. Apparently their parents do, so I wouldn't worry too much. But we're now in Eastlake. They won't feature at the Donald Ross design, but plenty of big names. Well, I don't have to remind you too much about last year, where it was won by Rory, who overcame the 6-shot deficit to beat Scotty Scheffler. With that, and speaking of the deficit and this staggered leaderboard and everything, Kit, I don't know if we've got your thoughts on that approach and what you think of that format overall. Do you think it's brought more drama to the playoffs, or is it a bit confusing, or is 10 under too much of an advantage? Where do you sit on it?
I'm not a fan, to be honest. Handicap golf is for amateurs. This is the Tour Championship. This should be the pinnacle of the sport, and you've got guys starting on different scores. I just think it's a bit silly, you know. Let's be honest, no one starting at -1 or even par has got a chance, so you take those 10 out of it. Yeah, the guys at -2 might make a run at a top 5, top 3, but they need a lot to go their way. They need some world-class golfers to have really bad weeks. So then you're down to the top 15, and, well, you know, I just don't like it. I think the best in a golf tournament, the guy who shoots the fewest shots that week to get the ball in 72 holes should be the winner. And I get why it's been done, to simplify it, to bring it together, that, you know, they thought it was confusing that you had the FedEx Cup points list going on at the same time as a tournament. But that's not really that confusing. They do it all through the whole season. We've just had it through the last 2 weeks of the playoffs, of them going, oh, he's in and out of the top 30, the top 50. Oh, if Matt Fitzpatrick holds this putt for birdie on 18, then that knocks Scheffler out of the top spot. Hovland gets there. It's not that hard. Just understand it and tell the narrative, tell the story. Like, it's beholden upon the people that are put in those seats to not make it, to make it clear to the viewer. And I think if you can't do that, maybe you shouldn't be in that seat. Potentially, that's being a bit harsh. But ultimately, I don't like golf tournaments that have a handicap when there are tens of millions of dollars on the line. And
if it was only tens of millions now, Kit, it's all
well,
that,
yeah, no,
all that now, isn't it? I think you mentioned, Ollie, about it doesn't make it more dramatic. The only reason this tournament has been dramatic over the last 4 years is because of Rory McIlroy. He's the only person, like, there's been 4 renewals of it, and the two, like, he's won 2 of them from off the pace, from 5 back and 6 back. And Dustin Johnson and Patrick Cantlay have kind of meandered to their wins in 2020 and 2021. And I always just find it hilarious that Kevin Na and John Rahm both got first next to their names on the OWGR for the Tour Championship that they didn't win. And the fact they can both have first just makes no sense to me. So, yeah, I'm a little bit in Kit's camp that, I think it's more dramatic when you can see someone going from 5th to 3rd with a putt.
Like, Patrick Cantlay got Player of the Year a couple of years ago on the basis that he'd won 4 events or whatever.
Yeah, one of them wasn't a win.
One of them was the Tour Championship, which he didn't actually win in terms of having the fewest strokes. And the other was the Memorial when John Rahm was lapping the field and had to pull out because of COVID. It's like, it affects people's career. I know, obviously, it affects people's careers. It's a Tour Championship. But let's grow up and play adult golf, shall we? Like, just set them all at 0 and let's go see who the best player is in the biggest event in the year. Yeah,
there's nothing that puts people, grown men in place, like a grow up. Ben, I know you're not at Eastlake this week, but you've been obviously before. What do you think of the course, and can you give us a lowdown, a bit of a look in for what we're looking for? Hopefully whatever you say is going to tick all the boxes of Tom's picks, like he's just done for you.
Oh man, well yes, I've been there multiple times for many Tour Championships, and I've got to be careful. I can get fired up like Kit, but I've got to smoke, so I've got to be careful of what I say. Well, I am a bit of a fan, just on the side of, like, if you make it there, I don't know, you could take the points away for me. Just the top 30 guys, off you go, winner take all. I wouldn't mind that. I would give more money to the guy.
That would be better than what there is now, Jamie. Yeah. Like, that would be better.
Just give more money to the regular season winner and then start a new competition, right? You get here, win it. If you're 30th going in, good for you. You don't go to the last, you don't go in the World Cup final you just mentioned with a 2-shot lead. It doesn't happen anywhere else. So I understand that way of thinking. But as for Eastlake, yeah, look, it's, well, you've got to have everything in your game going, all right? You can't get away with not hitting it long. You can't get away with hitting it too far off. But you honestly, for want of a better term, they always say you can't fake it around there. You can sometimes fake it around Eastlake. You just need to have a good tee to green game to keep it on the map. You need to not You need to avoid the big mistakes. Those big mistakes come from water on those few holes, or if you're Rory McIlroy hitting at OB over a fence on the first hole and then coming back from that. But yeah, look, the water is the main defense. The rough, I'm not there this week. They have in the past tried to grow it a little bit more so that they could maybe try to get these guys a little bit under pressure. At the same time, they want to see birdies because it's an entertainment product and it's the last one of the year. You mentioned guys, the bottom 10 probably not being in it. I think after the first round, you're almost down to five or six guys, and you want to hope that one of those is Rory McIlroy, because you need someone who can get after it and get some birdies. They swapped the nines, you know, a few years back to give us that potential grandstand finish, par five to finish, so guys can potentially go for it in two and make an eagle to win. But look, it's by no means the best tour, the best course we have on tour, but it gets the job done and it gives us a winner at the end. Tee to green, that's why you see the guys that have been there. But you need to make birdies on demand. That's one thing, and that's why Rory's been successful. Making birdies on demand comes with a player who can do that. But other than that, you had, as you mentioned, Cantlay, Ho-Hum, had Scheffler, who should have won it last year. Very boring right the way through. Just tee to green, 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 greens. You can get away with not being the best putter generally, except he didn't last year. A very bad missed putt on 17 that he would want back. But yeah, look, there's nothing really special about it. I hate to be that guy that says that, but I don't think you can put a big fingerprint on that you must do all of this perfect.
Okay, great. I mean, one eye conscious of time, because we could talk all day, I feel like, us four on golf and betting, which is lovely. But with that, whilst you're hot, Ben, who are you opening with? Who's he winning at East Lake? Now you can't put a finger on it. Who's winning?
Yeah, well, I'm going with the guy at the top, Scheffler. I think that there's going to be a revenge factor here. He's got that 10 under start. Look, that necessarily, look, isn't the hugest thing, because as you mentioned, in the past, we've got guys who have not done well with that, have struggled with that lead, and not necessarily gone well from that point. But I think he's just so immune to other things that he will just tee to green everybody to death. And it's interesting to note that where he's the only place, he's in the top five in basically every statistical metric we have this season. But the one thing he's not is he's 145th in strokes gained putting, right? Last 2 weeks he played in the tour, he lost 2.4 maybe to the field on putting. Well, he's two shots ahead. So he's been given the two shots. And that's to Victor Hovland, who, yes, was amazing, but not the greatest putter over a long stretch of time. I don't know if he can recreate what he did through four rounds at East Lake. He's certainly a chance. But with Scheffler getting a head start and not needing to make every putt, it's going to be very hard to bring him down.
Yeah, I think for me, when it comes to East Lake, there's one person's won it three times, it's Rory McIlroy. And look, he's given five-shot head start to Justin Thomas, given a six-shot head start to Scottie Scheffler, not even just at the start of the week, but the final round. And this week, he's only got to give three-shot head start. So I'm actually going to back him in the 72-hole market, where you can back him at 6-1, just have the lowest score, rather than the kind of 3-1 or whatever that you know, that they have. But I think for me, it's just the fact that he's just so good here. And he talks about the kind of value he finds in the FedEx Cup wins. People kind of mock it because he says it right after not winning a major championship, right? But he takes value in it and he enjoys it. And ultimately, he's figured out whatever it is that he needs to at East Lake. So I think he's going to do it.
One quick one, Tom. No one has gone back-to-back ever. So he needs to break that record. He was the first to do it three times, so we'll give him. But no one's gone back-to-back. There's a little bit of something there. And look, I think Scheffler wants revenge on him from last year, to be honest.
It is tough going back to back, as we've just seen Ben with Who Am I, which is just as hard. So the pressure there. Before we get your guys, we're only doing two outrights here, probably for this event because of it's only 30 in the field. Before we do that, Kit's our guy to say who needs the big week. We're now looking at the US team. Who needs that big week?
Well, we know in the Ryder Cup after last week that Scheffler, Wyndham Clark, Brian Harman, Cantlay, Homer, and Schauffele are all on the plane to Rome. Significantly, Homer and Schauffele knocked Koepka out of those automatic picks with their finishes at the most recent playoff event. So really, it's a 6 from 10 for the picks. And those 10 are Koepka, Spieth, Young, Morikawa, Bradley, Burns, Fowler, McCarthy, Thomas, Glover. Now, you may realise a couple of those guys aren't playing this week. So Justin Thomas, Danny McCarthy, have they done enough already? Well, that's the big debate, certainly around Thomas. Does Koepka get the pick? He probably should. In my mind, I think Koepka, Spieth, Morikawa and Fowler are probably already there. Cam Young, I think his odds on, am I right in saying, Tom, for a pick currently? Yeah. So most people think he's there. But then who gets the last spot? Is it Justin Thomas? Is it a Keegan Bradley who's had a really good season? A Sam Burns who started the season electrically but has just faded a little bit? Lucas Glover, well, they changed the format of when the picks are made. So if someone gets hot at the back end of the year after Billy Horschel did that a few years ago and didn't get the pick, well, Lucas Glover's done exactly that. But is he the star name? Do you pick an in-form Lucas Glover over an out-of-form Justin Thomas? Those are the question marks. And it's up to the guys who are in the field this week, and of course it's not all of them, to prove that they should be there to captain Zach Johnson, because he's got some big, big decisions coming up. And I think the fact that Wyndham Clark and Brian Harman have got themselves in there automatically, and they certainly deserve to be, they're both major champions this year. They've both played really well aside from winning those majors as well. So no doubt they deserve to be there, but they are not two players that you would have put on the American team certainly 12 months ago and possibly even 6 months ago. So that has made things a little bit difficult because there's two guys who you thought might be on there that are probably going to miss out. And someone that isn't even really in the conversation is someone like Tony Finau, who's probably left it too late now, even if he does have a big week. So, yeah, it's interesting. I think there's a lot more change in this US Ryder Cup team than we were expecting after that dominant performance a couple of years ago. I think you thought, well, probably 9 or 10 of these guys, if not 11, will definitely be there again. You know, the world of golf's a tumultuous place. That often doesn't ring true 2 years later. So really, it's someone like Fowler, Spieth in the field this week. Morikawa maybe's got something to prove. Young, and you know, Bradley or Glover, they're kind of the outsiders. Can they have a big week that gets them in ahead of Thomas?
Yeah, absolutely. It's fascinating, as you say. I think everyone's saying there's lots, going to be lots of new faces for Europe. It's been the narrative for the last year. It's going to be US as well, potentially. Couple of things on that, Ben. Firstly, what's the noise coming out of the American side of things? You're obviously based over there in terms of the team. And then secondly, just roll straight into your next pick for the tournament.
Yeah, sure. Well, I think the first thing that's very important to remember, and this goes for both teams, is it's not the 12 best players. It's the 12 best guys for a team. It's the 12 best to create a team in that scenario. So that does throw a cat amongst the pigeons in some of these guys. But look, let me tell you, from what I've heard, you're right about Cam Young, whether or not you agree he's on that plane or not. I've heard that he is pretty much a lock. Those guys you said ahead of him are definitely in, which does leave us with just one or two spots available. And look, Zach Johnson really likes Lucas Glover. They're good mates. But he knows that Lucas needs to do something this week. He's been given a leg up. He's starting at 5 under. I think that he's a sneaky chance, should he remain in the top five and at least be in contention through the week. But the other guys to talk, I'm talking in the betting stages of things. This is where you do look at that 72-hole market and perhaps top fives and top tens in that for the guys starting way back down, because they have something to play for that's not just this tournament. You mentioned Straka earlier for the Europeans. I know that he wants to show he's a birdie machine. That's what will get him on the team. I can make a million birdies in 18 holes. Pick me. Keegan Bradley, absolutely desperate to get on this team. He's probably the one on the outside looking in. He's not in there yet. He knows that the only way he's going to be considered is if he pushes himself up that leaderboard from 3 under. So I'll be interested to see what he does there. Ricky Fowler's another one. He's great in the team room. Other players want to be with him. So those are the names that, yes, look to top 10s and top 5s, especially in the 72-hole market. And I'll pivot to that because we're talking about the 72-hole market before. And this is a long-shot pick for the outright with the starting strokes, but definite pick for me if you're just doing the 72-hole score, and that's Schauffele. He's an East Lake specialist. He's won there before. 6 top 7s in his career at East Lake and a scoring average of 67.25 across his career there. He's on the plane, which helps him. But he feels like this, just speaking to him the last few weeks, he feels like this is a year that has not gone to the standard the year before. He wants to finish with a bang. No better place for him to do it than East Lake.
Perfect. So on Schauffele, I think that's 3 weeks in a row he's been tipped up. So he's probably listening and feeling a bit of pressure as well. So maybe this week he just tunes out and is focusing on chipping and putting. Lovely. So he is just for the 72-hole market there from Ben. And Tom Jacobs, you've got one more name for us as well in the outright.
Yeah, so for me, I think it's Max Homa. I've just been really impressed with the uptick in form again. I mean, it feels like his season's gone in waves. look, he's a winner now. Like, he's a multiple winner. What, was it 6-7 times on the PGA Tour? He had 4 points at the President's Cup, so he's very happy to contribute to team golf as well. And I think he's just going to want to go into that Ryder Cup in, you know, the form of his life, like everybody does. But crucially, he was third in the 72-hole scoring here last year on his East Lake debut, despite opening with a 71. So he actually finished 62, 66, 66 to finish fifth in the handicap leaderboard. And I think him starting at minus four and six shots back, he is about the lowest you can go and still think you can win. So I know, as Ben referenced there, that like Schauffele's starting at three under, so that's why you probably wouldn't take him in the kind of overall market. But I think Homer's just about close enough to really make a run at it. I think based on what he did here a year ago, he can do. So Max Homer for me there. And then in very briefly, the 72-hole scoring, it'd be Russell Henley for me. He's been exceptional for a long time this season. And he was third here on his second start in the Tour Championship before they changed the format. Really just like what Russell Henley is as a golfer right now. It's a perfect golf course for him. Donald Ross design. He loves Central Country Club at the Wyndham Championship where he's just finished second. So to me, Russell Henley's got everything. He's on the periphery. Sam Burns is on the periphery. It looks like Justin Thomas is in because he's not playing this week, and I don't think he's playing next week in Europe. Suggests to me he's been given a nod. So we're looking at one pick for Burns, Bradley, Glover, Henley, Finau probably. So there we go.
Perfect. I think you might be spot on there, Tom.
Tom's got on the inside. Well, there you go. That's a thorough preview on both events. Plenty of names thrown out, so it's time to quickly recap those now. So yes, time to look at the picks this week from our experts, starting with Tom Jacobs. And in the Czech Republic, he has gone for Antoine Rosner, Sean Crocker, Wilco Nienaber and Louis de Jager as his selections. And then over for the Tour Championship, it's Rory McIlroy, Max Homer and Russell Henley. Whereas Ben Everill has gone for Ludvig Åberg, Robert McIntyre and also Wilco Nienaber in Prague. And then at Eastlake, it's the combo of Scottie Scheffler and Xander Schauffele, who will get the job done for him this week. Yes, we're at the hour mark, so I'm going to, just one mailbag question. I've put my hand into it. We've pulled out Craig Thompson at Thompson Golf 94, who's come with Adrien Dumont du Chassard discuss. Now, we have already touched on him, but one person hasn't said too much so far is Ben Everill on this, and interested by your sort of opinions early on, because it feels like if Åberg wasn't doing what he was doing, then I think we'd be talking a lot more about this man and his Korn Ferry antics and everything else. So, if you start us off, Ben, and what's the noise over there? And, of course, Tom, Kit, jump in with anything else.
Obviously, boys, I don't know as much about him as you do, but one thing over here that he has been proven is that when he gets in contention, he's a winner. And we do see certain players that are winners and others that sort of go towards that moment, whereas it can be tougher for other players. And we mentioned earlier with Åberg, one of the things we saw when he got to the PGA Tour is if he got himself up there towards contention, every now and then he might pull back just a little as those moments ramped up. I think for the Belgian golf fans, they can see that we've got a new young talent that embraces those moments and wants to take those on. He's got a bit of mongrel in him. He's got a bit of fight. And that is even sometimes a better sign than consistent golf or consistent stats like we've seen across some of the other young stars. If he can maintain that, it's I've seen it with the likes from where I'm from with Cameron Smith. Like Cameron Smith coming up was small, he was dogged. He was able to turn his just desire and the fact of being a winner into big victories. And it seems like that's what we might have with this young man. Tell me if I'm wrong there, Kit, but I think that's what he's got going.
I think you're spot on. The impressive thing for me is that those great finishes and, you know, once outside the top 11 in 8 starts on the Korn Ferry Tour, the win, the second, haven't always come from good starts. So he's made slow starts, been battling to make the cut, shot mid-60s to make a cut, and then kicked on over the weekend. And that shows exactly what you're saying about the mongrel and the dog in him. And I think one factor that sometimes gets a little bit overlooked when we're looking at, oh, who do we want in the Ryder Cup? And Ben said it perfectly earlier. It's not the 12 best golfers. It's the 12 best guys to form a team on one particular course in one particular tournament that is very different to what they do week in, week out. And that is the Ryder Cup. And one of the greatest quotes I've ever heard about the Ryder Cup is every round in a Ryder Cup is like contending in a tournament final round on a Sunday. That's the level. Now, there are golfers that are brilliant players And when they get in contention, they lose a little bit. There are golfers that are brilliant players. And when they get in contention, they just continue being really good like they are. And then there are those special golfers who are brilliant and get in contention and find an extra gear. And that is when they're at the best. Those are the players that win majors. Those are the players that are the very best in the game. Those are the ones that have brilliant Ryder Cup records. And it's not just about finding the best player 51 weeks of the year. It's finding a player who has the mentality to go to that 1 week of the year, the Ryder Cup, and all that entails, and not only keep their level, but raise it.
I think that in terms of the Ryder Cup, we've had a couple of exciting Belgian rookies, haven't we, in Nicholas Coulthard and Thomas Peters as well. So, you know, there is something to it. Look, I'm just going to play devil's advocate a bit and just say that, like, Matt Wallace won three times in 2018 and couldn't get a pick. I don't know that necessarily even just being as consistent as he is. The one thing I would say is I'll go back to Ben and Kit and what they said, that, like, you can only beat and play what's in front of you. Will Zalatoris had this 3 or 4 years ago when he was stuck on the Korn Ferry Tour because of the no promotions after COVID. And he was playing way above the Korn Ferry Tour and just couldn't get into PGA Tour fields. It looks like Adrien Dudemont-Jachot, I can't even say his name, is going to be capable of winning PGA Tour titles, right? Like, I don't think that's going to be an issue. So I think he'll be absolutely fine. I don't think we should hold it against him that he hasn't done it yet. I just think that it's going to be very, very hard for him to get on, because I think Donald just wants Maronk or someone like that to kind of, Nicolai Højgaard, to kind of state their claim and save Adrien.
In reality, it's at least 6 months too early, probably, for ADC, as I'm now going to call him.
Right.
you know, 6 months down the line, yeah, we might be going, oh, maybe we should have picked him because he's kicked on and been brilliant. But I think it probably is too early, unless he wins in the next 2 weeks. And then I think there's a conversation to be had.
Love it. There you go. I mean, Craig, I hope that's answered your question on Adrien Dumont-Jachot and everything else. That was just let them run. I love it. But there you go. I think you're exactly right. We heard a few names mentioned there. And what I kept coming back to was a bit of, you know, fighting the dog in minor tours. And Mike Wallace, as he was known in America. Matt Wallace was thrown in with the Alps Tour. We saw that. And you often see it on these challenger tours that it's almost harder, or they're more competitive. And we've always seen that when you're trying to get your cards. And we're probably seeing that a bit with Adrien. It's a slightly different nature of the beast. But that's just over an hour of just great golf chat. I love it. So time to say a big thank you to this week's guest. We've had Tom, Ben and Kit with some amazing insights. You can find Tom on Twitter at TomJacobs93. Thank you, Tom. Ben is at BenEverillGolfBet. Thanks again for joining us and enjoy everything. I know you're not at Eastlake, but watching that. And of course, you can find Kit on Twitter at KitOnTheCourse. And he will be prancing around Prague. And I'm not jealous one little bit at all. But that's it this week. Join us next week for a preview of the Omega European Masters from Crans-sur-Sierre, the stunning Grand. And of course, we'll be chatting a bit more Ryder Cup if we've left anything in the tank, as Zach Johnson makes some of his final picks for Rome, and we'll look in detail with those. But until then, enjoy the golf, good luck with all your picks, and we'll see you next time on The Tips.